Well, that was an excellent session by Mike Collins, and thank you, Mike. I can't see you around, but that was an excellent session and a really nice taster before what's coming for the rest of the program. So we've got Mike Cook coming up next, and he's talking about the slippery slope, which is awesome. Now, I just want to say a little bit about Mike. Mike was born in England. Don't hold that against him, please. He moved his family to New Zealand as a child, and he grew up in an encouraging Christian home. However, at church, he was taught the gap theory. I'm just looking around to see if everyone understands what the gap theory is. Good, you're going to find out. With its associated deep time. During high school, a respected geography teacher presented strongly atheistic evolution in a convincing way. Growing doubts about creation, Genesis, and therefore the accuracy of the Bible put his spiritual growth on hold. And I think that can happen to many of us at different times through the same reasons. This changed dramatically in 1993, however, with a compelling biblical creation presentation in his church. Michael subscribed then to Creation magazine and vividly consumed resources on creation and apologetics. Over the years, this has revolutionized his relationship with God the Creator and appreciation for the absolute trustworthiness of the Bible. Michael has always been fascinated by technology and what makes things work. His professional training is in electronics. He has also worked for over 30 years as an electronics engineer and a designer. In 1989, Michael stepped into the business world, founding an electronic software design firm for which he still works, although now it has an international parent company. As technical director, he was responsible for the design of leading-edge electronic hardware and software systems used in a wide range of applications, with a particular focus on the environmental monitoring. Through this, he has gained a broad experience in the earth, biological sciences, with the company's systems installed internationally, primarily in government and environmental agencies. Very interesting, isn't it? In 2014, Michael and his wife, Desma, undertook an extensive overseas trip targeting major geological icons such as Mount St. Helens, the Giant's Causeway, which is in just outside Belfast, actually where I was born, and Sakaar Point. Where's that?
In Scotland.
Is it? Awesome. This included 9 days rafting and hiking in the Grand Canyon, an experience Michael describes as transformational. As part of an in-depth geology trip with Canyon Ministries, Michael is a founding member of the Hamilton Friends of CMI Group, established in 1999, and is currently its leader coordinator. Michael speaks for Creation Ministries International on a part-time basis. Michael and Desma have 2 adult children and 1 grandson. Michael, thank you very much for taking the time to come to speak to us. We welcome you.
Thank you, Doug. You did a fine introduction there. And again, it's a real privilege to be here this afternoon, both Mike Collins, my colleague, and myself. You know, it's really a blessing to come down to the Deep South, share this time. And Mike's really done what we call the keynote message, and what he's done is what we call a relevance talk, and that really trusts to set the framework for this weekend, that we're here to equip you, and that you are not only that you'll be able to give answers to those that you love, those you work alongside, those you live next to, but also your own faith, your own relationship with God will become that much stronger, and you'll be able to trust his word right from the very first verse. And as Doug alluded to, I actually was in Invercargill last year. And I did actually walk from Cape Reinga, so I did the Te Araroa Trail. Does anyone know about the Te Araroa Trail? people. And it finishes in Bluff, starts in Cape Ranger, and okay, yes. Really recommend it if you want to take out 4 months or so of your life and just walk and walk and walk. And so even somebody like me can do it. Now, I've always enjoyed the outdoors, and it was a real blessing to walk through our beautiful country and met some amazing people, had some great God time, and proved I could do it, and it was good. So 18th of January last year, I flew out of Invercargill Airport to go back on Desma's birthday to surprise her, and I turned up there with a beard and 9 kgs lighter. It was an awesome time, so it's good to be back again. Just quickly about the table out there, there's a range of tracks, which I'll talk about. You mentioned the gap theory. That's the idea of the millions of years inserted between Genesis 1 verse 1 and 1 verse 2, and we've got a tract about that. If you know, if you believe that, or you know anyone who does, that's a tract about it. Plus Sichar Point, which is where the thing that Mike talked about, the geological layers were interpreted as being millions of years old. James Hutton studied these rocks at Sichar Point, which is about 60 kilometres from Edinburgh in Scotland, and Desmond and I visited there as well. There's a tract about that and how it can be interpreted much better in the Bible framework. And Giant's Causeway, Northern Ireland, again, a real evidence for flood and rapid formation. So help yourself to those tracks. It'll be hopefully something that will really equip you. Okay, I'm aware of the time. So what's allowing for dinner and so on? What's the target time? So I might run through this. I don't want to miss out on dinner. Dinner's really important, okay? Okay, sometime in there. All right, so again, it's because Mike and I are working together with talks, some of the talks we've tweaked a bit, that we do as a standalone, we may have more stuff in than each one. So we're hoping some things will be repeated. So for each of you who are being here right through the whole weekend, you will hear some things that are the same. We'll see slides that are similar. But we're trying as best as possible to complement each other and to build on our talks. Now, tomorrow I'm actually speaking at the Ellis Road Church, and I'll be doing what's my talk called Genesis and the Gospel, Jesus is the Key. And it's along the lines of what Mike did. So that's a repeat of the relevance talk, but it's focusing on Jesus, you know, and his centrality of him to Scripture. So that's my talk tomorrow at the other church. Okay, so the slippery slope. Now, we talked about slippery slopes. Now, does anyone know this iconic mountain, where it is? What it is? It is actually Mount St. Helens, which is in Washington State in the US of A. And this is the one that erupted in 1980. And Mike showed some slides of some of the geological things that happened in that area. You see the whole top of that mountain blew out. A third of the mountain was exploded out in a massive eruption. And Desmond and I visited that. And one of the things you can see there, there's a trail going round towards Spirit Lake. And you see the sign there, you know, keep to the trail, danger, you're on your own if you go here. You are warned. And it's a bit like some parts of Mount Taranaki and even Ruapehu. If you got off the trail and started to slide on the scree, you would basically go and then you go over the edge. You know, it would be really bad. So for us, you know, this whole thing, the slippery slope, and that's an example of a slippery slope you don't want to go over the edge on. So this talk is really, it's in some ways it's a little bit, it's dark, a little bit more compromising, but it's talking about things, people who have walked with the Lord, but for whatever reason they've gone off the trail and started to slide, and eventually gone off the edge into complete rejection of Christianity. So I've got two main case studies I want to look at. What can we learn from these people, and how can we be protected against sliding off the slippery slope ourselves? So the first one is this gentleman here, Dr. Will Provine. Now, sadly, he's passed away now. He got a brain tumour and died fairly recently. But he was a guy who was brought up in Tennessee in the 1940s and 50s as a church-going youth. And but towards the end of his life, he was very much a very outspoken atheist and a determinist. In other words, the whole thing of materialism, what we can see around us materially, that's all there is. The natural world has to be explained by what we can measure, you know, the laws of chemistry and physics. And he totally rejected the ideas that humans have any free will. And he believes no God, there's no life after death, and there's no moral right and wrong, no moral compass. It's all just subjective. If it feels good for you, do it. If not, do something else. And there's no meaning or purpose in life at all. So Mike talked about the three big questions. You know, where do I come from? Why am I here? Where am I going? For Dr. Provine, all three of those things. I evolved. I got here by chance over millions of years. There's no purpose, no free will, no right or wrong in this life. And when I die, I'm just going to be dead. That's all there is. So I've actually got a short video clip of Dr. Provine, and it's actually quite a dark video anyway, likewise as well as what he's sharing, but he's just sharing his heart. And he was interviewed by Ben Stein. I don't know if you remember Ben Stein, the American actor. He was in Ferris Bueller's Big Day Out. He was the English teacher. Have you seen that movie? Anyway, he did a movie called Expelled, looking at the whole idea of intelligent design being rejected and censored in education and science in the States. He interviewed Dr. Provine, and this is just an excerpt, about a minute or so, of what he's talking about if you go down the evolutionary route, where things will lead to.
No gods, no life after death, no ultimate foundation for ethics, no ultimate meaning in life, and no human free will are all deeply connected to an evolutionary perspective. You're here today and you're gone tomorrow, and that's all there is to it.
Dr. Will Provine, professor of the history of biology at Cornell University, gave us another disturbing glimpse into where Darwinism can lead.
Oh, I was a Christian, but I never heard anything about evolution because it was illegal to teach it in Tennessee.
Dr. Provine's first biology professor changed all that.
He started talking about evolution as if it had no design in it whatsoever. And I came up to him and I said, "You've left out the most important part." And he said, "If you feel the same way at the end of one quarter, I want you to stand up in front of the students in this class and tell them this deep lack in evolution." And I read that book so carefully, I could find no sign of there being any design whatsoever in evolution. And I immediately began to doubt the existence of the deity. But it starts by giving up an active deity. Then it gives up the hope that there's any life after death. When you give those two up, the rest of it follows fairly easily. You give up the hope that there's an immanent morality. And finally, there's no human free will. If you believe in evolution, you can't hope for there being any free will. There's no hope whatsoever of there being any deep meaning in human life. We live, we die, and we're gone. We're absolutely gone when we die.
Do you feel encouraged and inspired? It's sad, isn't it? I mean, again, he's a guy who's sharing his heart, but he, again, gone that slippery slope, started off with the evolutionary teaching. He didn't really have anything to counter it. And bit by bit, his faith went, you know, gave up the idea of an active God, a God who created the active deity as God. No God, no life after death. And then you start to, bit by bit, the slide increases in speed until you become a full-on dedicated atheist. Now, lots of people don't go that far, but he's being very frank, isn't he? You know, my heart really goes out to him. He, again, a very intelligent guy, he's gone down that track of throwing away whatever faith he had as a young person. So that's our first defining there. And again, so many of these active evangelical atheists we're seeing out in the world, a lot of them don't actually really, not so much don't believe in God, they actually hate God, don't they? And they're actively evangelizing, like Richard Dawkins with the God delusion and this whole thing. They're actively now going out promoting atheism and coming against God. That's why it's great to see a number of young people here too, and you've probably seen on TikTok and other things, there's actually an increasing movement of different videos and different people coming out. You know, I was a Christian, but now I've chucked it in for these reasons. It's becoming very much a thing to do, isn't it, to come out, publicly reject your Christian faith or your Christian upbringing, and embrace an evolutionary and atheistic lifestyle. But just going back to the 1940s, there's another case study here of a gentleman called Charles Templeton. Now, he was actually an amazing guy. He was an evangelist, and he actually partnered with Billy Graham. So he's born in 1915, and his mum, he's just a single mum, you know, she brought him up, did a great job, and he only had a year nine education, left school, and then he was hired by the Toronto Globe as a sports cartoonist, so he was obviously gifted in art and so on. And then later on, he actually was profoundly converted to Christianity. He had a real encounter of God, a real moment where he was spiritually confronted with his, I guess, sinful nature, and he was profoundly converted. So I'm not sure about Dr. Will Provine, whether he had that, you know, born-again experience, a real relationship with Jesus. We don't know. But for Charles Templeton, he clearly did. And here's just an account of his conversion. "As I knelt by my bed in the darkness, my mind was strangely vacant. thoughts and words wouldn't come into focus, and after a moment it was as though a black blanket had been draped over me. A sense of enormous guilt descended and invaded every part of me. I was unclean. Involuntarily I began to pray, my face upturned, tears streaming. The only words I could find were, "Lord, come down, come down, come down." So he's obviously had that amazing sense of his own inadequacy before a living and holy God. In a moment, a weight began to lift, a weight as heavy as me. It passed through my thighs, my belly, my chest, my arms, my shoulders, and lifted off entirely. I could have leapt over a wall, just that sense of freedom and forgiveness. It seemed as though a light had turned on in my chest and its refining fire had cleansed me. I hardly dared breathe, fearing I might end your altar at that moment. I heard myself whispering softly over and over again, "Thank you, Lord, thank you, thank you." And I'd say this guy here had a real encounter, didn't he? At that point, he really came into a point of being born again and a relationship with Jesus. And from that, he went out, joined up with Billy Graham. And these two guys were amazing. They just preached, especially in the 1940s, to thousands and thousands of people, including Youth for Christ, which had been formed then, so they were out there. And actually, Charles Templeton was actually a more popular, more powerful evangelist than Billy Graham in those days. He was amazing. He was actually listed amongst those best used of God. And so huge people, numbers of people would go to the services he ran. Thousands would come forward and give their hearts to the Lord. He was amazingly used of God. And you see different pictures of him there praying with Billy Graham and these huge packed out halls of people being touched by Charles Templeton's ministry and his testimony. But then he started to encounter, again, the slippery slope. He's on the trail and suddenly his foot slips a bit. He actually went to Princeton University. He wanted to increase his training, so he went along and I'll do a degree in theology at Princeton University. So he went along. And as he started to go now, he started to start to question the Christian faith, the essentials of the Christian faith. He started to doubt God's word, starting in Genesis, because of the ideas, the worldview ideas he encountered at Princeton University, which although it was an ostensibly, you know, Christian-founded university, it was increasingly evolutionary in its teaching. And so Charles Templeton started to hear these ideas, and the chink of doubt started in his own Christian faith. Even though he knew the Lord, the Bible doesn't seem that credible. And one time he went to Billy Graham and he actually said, you know, I want to go. And he was talking back before he even went. Then he'd started to read things and he was increasingly concerned about how credible the Bible was. And he actually said to Billy Graham, his dear friend and partner, he said, "But Billy, it's just simply not possible any longer to believe, for example, the biblical account of creation. The world wasn't created over a period of days a few thousand years ago. It's evolved over millions of years. It's not a matter of speculation. It's a demonstrable fact." You heard that before? Evolution is a fact. You've got your faith, that's fine, but evolution is a fact. And that's what he was encountering and thinking. And actually, Billy Graham, as the conversations went on, Billy Graham, he said, "Look, Charles, I don't have all the answers. I don't really know. I can't respond to what you're saying. But I'm making this declaration that on God's word, I will stand no matter what, no matter how poor my understanding is of the completeness. I trust God and I trust his word." Isn't it amazing? So Billy Graham stepped out in faith back in the 1940s and 50s when evolution had probably the highest credibility than it does. You know, these days it's not credible at all because of science. Back then I think it was vaguely credible based on the lack of understanding they had. But Templeton, actually his faith crumbled more and more. And eventually he came back from his degree and he actually said, "How can one believe the biblical account of the creation of the world in 6 days when every eminent physicist agrees that all living species have evolved over millions of years from primitive beginnings?" So this is again the idea. All the scientists, how can all the scientists be wrong? Every eminent scientist believes evolution. You know, you're on a limb here. How can you defend it against this huge sea of people who believe evolution and disprove the Bible? You see, so he's really gaining attraction on the slope over the edge, sadly. He went on, though. He actually was a very talented, originally a cartoonist, and he began to write. He wrote various books. And in 1982, he wrote one called The Anecdotal Memoir, and he actually commended Billy Graham. He always respected Billy. He said, "Billy, you know, he's an amazing guy, and he's honourable. He is really, really real in his faith, and I respect him." And he said, "There's no feigning in him, Billy Graham. He believes what he believes with an invincible innocence. He's the only mass evangelist I would trust. It's a great accommodation, isn't it? So even though he said, Billy, you're naive, you're believing the Bible without the evidence backing it up, but I respect you for it, you know, and you're a guy who really has got his heart in the right place. So they had that respect. But sadly, Charles Templeton's slide increased, and again, there's a bit of a theme here. People who are famous and go over the edge, they become very public in their denunciation of the Bible and of their Christian faith. And Charles Templeton eventually, in the 1970s, he wrote a book called Farewell to God, you know, My Reasons for Rejecting the Christian Faith. So his slide had gone so far, he felt he had to unload himself and actually write this book. And he's, it's just amazing. He just really said that was the way it was going to go. I believe there's no supreme being with human attributes. There's no God in the biblical sense. But life is the result of timeless evolutionary forces, having reached its present transient state over millions of years. So yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Just the whole idea, he's gone that far to feel that there's no God at all. But sadly and interestingly, when he was towards the end of his life, he was interviewed on a BBC thing and he was talking about his book. And at one point, he just something came up about Jesus. And he actually burst into tears and said, when I think about Jesus, he said, I miss him. So he still had that vestige of his relationship with Jesus, but you know, even though he didn't believe in God or you know that Jesus was a real person who, apart from a historical figure, he still had that thread of connectivity, isn't it? So it's a huge amount to give up, isn't it, when you go over the edge, to reject all that conversion experience and the influence you've had on people, to throw it all out and think of the effect you've had on other people who have respected you and followed you. It's a huge load, isn't it? So Charles Templeton, an amazing guy, slipped over the edge, and only God knows where he was at the end. You know, we don't know, but sadly he appears to have totally chucked the towel in, rejected his faith, and wrote a book about it. And again, but at least he was consistent. You know, he didn't believe the Bible because of you know science, and he was inconsistent. He wasn't actually trying to wedge evolution into the Bible. He just rejected the whole lot because, as Mike talked about, once you allow the wedge of millions of years and evolution into the Bible, it destroys so many things. And I'll be talking about that tonight when I talk about can we trust the manufacturer's manual? In other words, the Bible, our manufacturer's manual. And the Bible, yes, it does stack up when we look at it through the lens of logic. But Charles Templeton, he actually said, if you can't trust the Bible in areas of science, things like geology, biology, astronomy, things where the Bible makes statements that have an effect on these areas, you then can't trust it spiritually either. So if creation is a crock and you know all that sort of stuff, well, why would you believe Jesus when he said, I'm going to prepare a place for you? Why would you believe the account of the resurrection or Lazarus and you know the virginal conception, all these things? Why believe those if you don't believe the things at the beginning in Genesis? So he was consistent. You can't trust Genesis. The whole Bible goes. It's not trustworthy at all. And you end up with this end result, a loss of hopelessness, you know, a loss of hope, don't you? You become like Will Provine. You give up the Christianity and you end up in this thing of no hope, no future. Where am I going? Well, I die and I become worm food. There's nothing after that. It's just oblivion. So the whole loss of hope and purpose, which is really sad, isn't it? I hope it's not too depressing, but again, I'm just showing you that we have that the joy of the Lord, the hope and the purpose we have having a Christian faith, which we would both agree, Mike as well, I'm sure you do as well, that we have a logical faith that is defendable and that actually stacks up against the evidence we see in the world. But to lose that and just throw everything away and have that atheistic hopelessness must be tragic. Okay, so Charles Templeton, he was back in the 1940s and 50s. Let's bring it up to the current time, up to today, with social media and the influencers and so on. So here we've got two young guys, amazing guys, real comedians, called Rhett and Link. Has anyone heard of Rhett and Link? Yeah. They're really big in the States. Not so well known here, but again, really real characters. You know, they're these two formerly Christian guys, they got together and they're good at music, they're good at comedy, they did all sorts of skits and you know harebrained things and so on. They had over 16, well, they've still got 16 million or more followers on Facebook and so on and YouTube. So they're hugely influential among young people in the States especially. But if we go back to them again, they were really committed Christians. They loved the Lord, they were very involved in Christian ministry. Right from their primary school through high school and university, they were just, you know, as thick as thieves, you know, really good friends, a good team together. And they both were studying engineering at a university, which I think maybe led to some of their unbelief starting, you know, the evolutionary teaching again. But soon after they left that was just, they were still strong Christians. They left and they actually focused on Christian evangelism. So they began to work with the Campus Crusade for Christ, which is now called CRU. And so basically a university ministry that goes out and they share the gospel and so on. So these guys were there using their talents to actually spread the gospel amongst students. They were still full on for the Lord at that point. But sadly, last year in 2020, February, they actually went online on their broadcast, the Ear Biscuits, they called it, the Ear Biscuits, and they actually publicly came out. And they spent a couple of hours of very detailed coming out about why they no longer were Christians and why they walked away from their Christian faith. So you can imagine again the whole Christianity, all these people who looked up to them, respected them, and suddenly, Rhett and Link, they've chucked the towel in, what's going on here? And so they actually went through a whole detail of things. So they actually said, look, we're no longer Christians. And Rhett said he would call himself a hopeful agnostic. So an agnostic is someone who's not so much an atheist, they just say, well, we don't know if there's a God or not. You know, agnosia means ignorance in the Greek and so on. And so it just means we don't know about God, but we're hopeful, maybe. And then Link said, I'm an agnostic who wants to be hopeful. You see? So they've moved from born-again, full-on Christians to hopeful agnostics. Why do they do that? Well, they obviously influenced millions of people. And the things they came out with, a range of things. And they used this analogy, like having a sweater, a jersey, cardigan or whatever, and you've got a loose thread on it, and you pull the thread, and the more you pull on the thread, eventually the whole thing unzips and you've got nothing left. And so they talked about their faith. They found a few loose ends that didn't stack up, so they pulled on them, and nothing seems to be there. The more they pulled on their faith, it seemed to just fall apart and crumble. Everything they believed, they thought, well, this doesn't stack up to scrutiny at all. And eventually they had nothing left. Their sweater was unwound to the point of giving up on Christianity. And interestingly, instead of starting with the evolutionary idea, they first had doubts about Jesus and the resurrection. They thought, the resurrection? You've got to be kidding. Well, as we know in 1 Corinthians 15, you know, if Jesus did not rise from the dead, our faith is void, isn't it? We are, of all people, to be most pitied. And so it's interesting, they thought the historicity of Jesus and the resurrection were the first areas to go. But then they started to go on to this whole thing about how can a good God allow bad things? And then, you know, the whole thing, ridiculousness of biblical creation and the myth of the flood. So you see all these things start to fall apart. And they've got some quotes there. They said, first of all, the Gospels are just a mix of religious propaganda as well as some actual history. So, okay, the Gospels are pretty well debunked. If I don't have to believe that God ordered his chosen people to slaughter men and women and children by the thousands, why should I? Again, the whole thing, which I'll talk about tonight, about the God of the Old Testament, you know, is he, as Richard Dawkins says, you know, a genocidal, filicidal, you know, everything else monster. So these guys thought, well, the Old Testament's pretty hard. What sort of God? I don't want to believe in that. So they chuck the towel in because of that. I'm not ever going to believe that the earth is 10,000 years old, you know, like that car left years ago. So, you know, if you believe in a young earth, you know, you're ridiculous, the whole thing. So they chuck that out. And essentially, every criticism of evolution I'd held on to justify my unwillingness to believe it turned out to be a misconception or misrepresentation of the facts. So what he's really saying is, you know, evidence or resources like we have here, they looked at some of these things or things they were told about evolution, they thought, well, this actually doesn't stack up. These creationists are telling lies, you know. So they started to say, well, evolution does stack up against criticism. And we would actually beg to differ, I think. And then they said, the Bible began to make a lot more sense to me personally as a product of human wisdom rather than God. In other words, the God, you know, he's mentioned in the Bible, but it's all written by human authors only, with all their foibles. Doesn't make much more sense beyond that. And again, I talk tonight again about the Bible. Why trust the Bible? You know, why the holy book idea? Why should we trust the Bible as a holy book? So you see again, they came out in a lot of detail about why each of these areas they felt were indefensible and their sweater had become unwound and they walked away. So I think they're continuing their podcast, their music and comedy, but now without a Christian theme. They've just gone fully secular. So you can imagine the whole thing about how many people have actually been affected by people like this, isn't it? And I'm sure others are doing it. So is anyone actually here, you young people, any other things you're actually seeing on social media now about, you know, well-known Christians who are coming out like these guys? And being an older person, I'm not so much on TikTok and so on, but I'm hearing more and more of these people are coming out. So is that something you're seeing or hearing, or people at school or university who are formerly Christians and chucking in the towel? Or maybe, you know, we've got family friends. I know I've got nieces and nephews I know who have actually walked with the Lord but now have walked away because of some of this teaching. So it really is a bit of an epidemic, isn't it? So again, we want to emphasize again, we've got rational belief in why God is real. You know, we transform lives. We've got great evidence about why we can trust the Bible in an age of science. And we want to really, really encourage, because the battle is heating up, isn't it? The battle for hearts and minds, the battle for our young people, the battle for our morality within our society. More and more atheists are becoming more and more aggressive to try to, you know, take the microphone and to influence the way society is going, the way education is going. And so we need to know where we can turn, how we can actually present the truth in a graceful but also encouraging and compelling way. So again, I'm going to bridge this a bit more to the way the Bible should be trusted tonight. So that's why I've cut some things out of this tonight, today, to complement Mike's talk earlier, but also tonight to build on why the Bible is trustworthy, because the Bible is central to our faith. You know, God is the creator, he's the manufacturer, and why we should trust his manual. So I'm going to link into that tonight. But the short-term thing is, how do we avoid the slippery slope? How do we avoid stumbling on the edge of the slope, sliding in the gravel, scrabbling to hold on to our faith, and then eventually going off the edge? Number one, it's really encouraging to remember, just stay on the trail. Okay? Remember what the trail is and stick with it. Don't, oh, wonder what that thing, you know, wonder what that is. The more we wander and take up different ideas, the more we are in danger of actually slipping off the trail. But having said that, and I want to couch this in a careful way, but it's also important, especially if your faith is strong, is to actually read some of the atheist writings. Like I've read Richard Dawkins, some of his books, understanding where he's coming from, his style. So if you read that, and we've got some great resources to refute what he's saying in a very good way. But it's good to understand what the other side is saying. If we say, "Oh, I'm not going to touch that," then you're not going to hear the other side. So it's important to, within your own level of confidence and wisdom, to read some of the other resources out there, see if they really stack up, because you find they don't. But make sure you're locked into the Lord, you have a good relationship with God, you're in a good church, you know, and you're just keeping your relationship fresh with him. And it's good to just be aware of where the battle is, understand what evolutionary teaching is, and understand how it does not stack up. But also heed the warnings. You know that sign there? You know, stay on trail. There's heaps and heaps of warnings in Scripture, isn't there, about not taking on ideas and things that are held up against the knowledge of God. So we need to, when we see warnings, don't go down this track, don't do this, you know, do not neglect your relationship with God, we need to take that on board and actually really realize that it's an important life or death thing. And really, really important is know your guide. Okay, so not just know about your guide. We're on a trail. It's like Pilgrim's Progress. There's different hazards, swamps, and all sorts of things that can happen in our journey of life. And so we need to know that we've got a guide who will take us through those things. So it comes back to that idea of staying on trail, but knowing that we need to be guided sometimes. And it's also really encouraging to keep in fellowship, to pray for each other, you know, having connect groups in church, and just making sure you're not isolated. Once you move out away from Christian fellowship, away from Christian counsel and wisdom and prayer, you're much more likely to be attacked by the enemy to try to draw you away. So keep connected to God and keep connected to strong Christians who can really encourage you, mentor you, and pray for you. And above all, it's really, really important that you're equipped. And that's why, again, we're doing what we do, that Creation Ministries is an equipping ministry. We're here to equip the body of Christ. We're non-denominational, and we're donation-funded. So as Mike talked about, we sell the books in a cost-effective way. That's to get you equipped, because you're not going to remember all the things that we're saying. We're throwing a lot of stuff out at you. But if you start to feed yourself, go onto our website, get Creation Magazine, get the resources, you can start to feed and build on your own faith and understanding. It's like with me, it's taken years to understand over those years since I first had my creation, I guess, born-again experience. And so be equipped, because once you're confident, you can then get out and connect with other people. And when they struggle, you can say, well, that's a good question. I'm not really sure, but can I get back to you? And you can go off to creation.com or whatever and go back with a good answer for them. And talking about that, tomorrow night we are having a Q&A session, and there's a box out on the table, as Doug mentioned. Feel free to write those questions. We're happy to answer any question, as long as it's respectful, any question that touches on, you know, creation, evolution, the Bible, apologetics, the goodness of God, whatever you want. We're happy to take those on. And tomorrow, our last session will be Mike and I addressing those questions. And hopefully, if you write them down, we'll be forewarned and we can maybe get some slides prepared or bring them up so we can actually show you some PowerPoint slides that will help answer those questions. So we love questions. There's no such thing as a bad question. Okay? And I encourage you to ask questions. Don't, if you have doubts and struggling with things, that's fine, it's good. The biggest thing is don't hide it and cover it up, because unless you reach out and ask questions, you're not going to be helped. Okay, so questioning is good. You know, doubting within the framework here. So if we say, oh, just have faith, you know, don't doubt, that's not helping someone who's really struggling. So we need to get alongside people, understand where they're at, are they struggling in different areas, and really try to help them and equip them. So that's the key thing, isn't it? Again, be equipped. If we're equipped, if we put on our life jacket, if we pull the oxygen mask down for ourselves first before helping someone else, to use an analogy of aircraft, you know, if you've got somebody who's gasping away and you try to help them and you black out, it's not going to help, is it? So sometimes deal with yourself first, get yourself prepared, get yourself ready to help, and then you can reach out to help someone else who's struggling. So the slippery slope is out there, but don't fear it. Don't say, well, these strong Christians are falling over the edge, what's going to stop me doing it? It's just simple. Stay on trail, you know, heed the warnings, know your guide, and be equipped. And every day's another day on the journey with the Lord, isn't it? And so, again, we cannot reemphasize too many scriptures that just warn us again. Here's a warning sign. See to it that no one takes you captive by philosophy. And again, evolution is a philosophy. It's not scientific. It's actually a historical interpretation, a philosophy that's brought in. It's an empty deceit according to human tradition. So evolution is an empty deceit from human tradition, and it's against Christ. In other words, an elemental spiritual thing of the world, not of the Lord. And also in 1 Thessalonians 5:21, we're encouraged to test all things and hold fast to that which is good. Now, this scripture, of course, applies to prophecy and so on within the church, but it applies to whatever we allow to come in through our eye gate and our ear gate, what we read and so on. So test all things. Does that really stack up? You know, fake news is a big thing these days. Don't believe everything you see on Wikipedia or on Google or on YouTube or on Facebook. Test all things. Does it really stack up? What's their source? What's the authority they have behind that? What's the evidence for what they're claiming? And that applies to us too. When we make statements as Christians, we need to be able to back them up with evidence. And again, we're going to emphasize the scripture over and over again. Honor Christ the Lord as holy. So it's all about Jesus. And I'm talking again about Jesus tomorrow. It's all about him. Creation and evolution are important, as Mike explained, but it's all about Jesus. He's central to our faith. He's our creator and our redeemer. Always be prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that's within you. So each one of us needs to know our own testimony. You know, I was like this before, and then I came into a relationship with Jesus, and now I'm like this. So we've all got a journey, no matter whether it's from absolute abject crime and destruction through to an amazing conversion, or whether it's just you've been brought up in a Christian home, God's preserved you from many things that could take you off the rail. That's a testimony as well. You need to be thankful for that. So your own testimony is really, really important. So never feel like, oh, I haven't really got a testimony. We've all got a testimony. But as Mike emphasized again, we will always do it with gentleness and respect. No one wants a legalistic, Bible-bashing, finger-pointing, condemning, you dirty sinner, you know, etc. We just need to get alongside people, understand where they're at spiritually, how they got to be there. You know, what influences have they had in the past? What books have they read? What teachers have they listened to? What things have they seen on TV that's brought them to this point of doubting God? Or maybe they've been abused or hurt in the past. Maybe they've had unanswered prayer that they led to disappointment. Lots of people have reasons about where they get to a point of doubting or hating God. And so we need to understand, oh, you know, it's really hard. I know that's been difficult for you. You know, just love them and then understand how you can lovingly equip them and point them back to Jesus. So it's not just a step one, two, three, four. Okay, got you fixed, right. Step one, two, three, four, got you fixed. It's not like that. It's hearing from the Lord about how to address issues that people are facing. And I just want to finish off with, this is a really encouraging testimony. One of the great things about, as Mike will know, is being a CMI speaker, we have access to a testimony database. And there are literally thousands of things that come in through email and through Facebook and so on. People who have been touched by CMI's ministry, and the Lord's used our resources to really bless people. And here's a New Zealand marine biologist. Their name's obfuscated, which is what we do, is some testimonies that are published, you take the surname out. But here she is. She was an embittered evolutionist, hated God, thought the whole thing about creation was a total crock. And then she, bit by bit, she actually came to faith. Didn't lose her science. She's a full-on PhD marine biologist here in New Zealand, profoundly converted and, you know, with a rational faith. She loves God, she loves science, and she's a full-on biblical creationist as well. So there's the link there for it, Claire S. testimony. Have a look at it. Very much a Kiwi testimony of someone who hasn't gone off the slippery slope. They've come back and are a vibrant Christian because of having the right resources to pull down those evolutionary lies that they've taken on board. We've also got, as a church, or maybe if you've got connect groups, we've got a really, really neat study series called the Genesis Academy. And it's a 12-part study series, a series of half-hour videos, and there's a series of worksheets you can get offline. Really, really good to do as a study group, as a church, or as a home group ministry, or a seminar at church. So I really encourage you, if you're a church leader or you've got a connect group, this is a really good series to equip people thoroughly about where Genesis came from, how it's foundational to the Bible right through. So it's a really great resource. And we've also got this book on the table there called Christianity for Skeptics. And it's very much not so much about atheism. It is about atheism, but also about Buddhism or Islam and all these different things that take people away from a biblical understanding of the gospel. So it's really easy to read. It's got like cartoon type, little pictures in it and so on. You know, it's very adult, but of course it's very easy to read. And so you've got these little things in there. Have a look at it. It's a really great thing to give to someone who's struggling with, well, Christianity is just out of date, or it's a myth and I'm going into Buddhism or something. This addresses all the different areas, including atheism as well. So it's a great resource. And lastly, I'm just going to reiterate again, for your young people who are maybe at uni now or thinking about it, this is a really, really good resource just to equip them and to help them in their in their walk with the Lord. So again, a lot thrown at you, but we want to really encourage you, don't feel you're going to slip away, that there's too many obstacles, we're going to give up our faith, go over the edge. Just hang in there and keep close to the Lord and be equipped. So thank you. I think we're being on time there. And tonight, again, we'll be talking again about a couple of other talks after dinner. And Mike's going to be talking about, do not be surprised about suffering. How can a good God allow suffering and difficulty in life? And I'm talking about the Bible and how it's credible when examined under a microscope. So Doug, back to you.